Welcome back to These Are Bad Movies. I'm Amanda Ferriante.
And I'm Amy Bell.
And this week, Amy thinks she's gonna get one over on me.
And I am. What?
No, you won't. I come into this with my eyes wide open.
Uh-huh.
I've been ready for this one for years. We're gonna talk about Iron Man.
Yay!
I know you don't like it. I know. I've known you don't like it. It is a movie I love. It is a movie that's been very influential in my life.
And this is basically Amanda owes me for last week's episode about Indiana Jones, where I was clearly a very dumb kid. And I feel like this week we get to explore Amanda, the very dumb kid.
Oh, the dumbest. Yeah. This is correct. So, Iron Man came out in 2008.
Okay.
I would have been 11 or 12.
Okay.
And I saw it at least two times in theaters. Possibly three times.
Okay.
And it just blew me away. It blew me away. I was like, whoa, that's so crazy. And it inspired me to become an engineer.
Yes.
Which I did not end up becoming.
I'm not an archaeologist, Amanda.
You did get a degree, though.
That has, like, kind of a relation to it.
Yeah. Law, business, I guess business, but business was so far afield from my perspective of Iron Man and Tony Stark. Like, it wasn't related for me.
Yeah.
It didn't go well. And also the movie's bad, but I love it.
It didn't go well.
No, for me.
Oh, being an engineer.
No, I did not become one, in fact.
Yeah.
So it's probably not the best field to go into if you struggle with numbers and physics and the hard sciences.
The hard sciences.
Like, in my efforts as a pre-engineering major, I think technically I was, like, assigned mathematics.
Uh-huh.
By the junior college counselors.
Yeah.
Through all those efforts, when I finally decided, hey, I'm not passing these classes, I should turn this ship around, I ended up getting a humanities associate just from the random slew of courses I'd taken in my efforts to be an engineer eventually. At one point, because I just was like, this is the path, this is the way forward, I decided to apply to MIT. And when you're applying to MIT for an engineering track, maybe for other tracks too, but I was specifically wanting an engineering track, it's not just the regular essays and references and things. There's also a math test that you have to have overseen. And
proctored,
yeah. Yes, that you have to have proctored and submit along with the rest of your application.
Okay.
And so I sat down outside of my calculus 3 professor's office for this exam, and mind you, this is the same professor who at the end of the semester I said, hey, I don't think I'm going to pass your class. And he said, don't worry, you will. And I think he fudged the curve for me. Because he'd seen so much of me trying very hard to be just okay. Right? So I'm sitting outside of his office for like an hour with this test. And I look at it and I go, if Richard Feynman could reinvent calculus, so can I. And let me tell you, I did not. I think I threw some like bad algebra at those poor people. Like, it was sad. So I did not become an engineer.
I love though that you sat down with these math equations that you could not figure out the conventional way. So you're like, I'll just have to reinvent calculus.
Yes. It's like, this is the only path forward.
You had the spirit of the engineer.
I had the will and no way. So Iron Man gave me a lot of grief. And it still holds a special place in my heart.
Well,
but I'm willing to roast it.
I really can't wait for this now. I'm crying already. because this is adorable.
Yeah. In hindsight, at the time, it was such a terrible gauntlet.
Yeah.
That I'd thrown down for myself. Yes. And other people were going, now you gotta pass through. Hope you make it. And eventually I went, I'm not gonna make it.
Oh my gosh. Because they were like, well, you set a goal. You have to achieve it now.
Yeah, keep in mind.
Never like, hey, maybe you should reconsider your goals.
No. It's like, you can achieve anything. And I came to the conclusion that like, yeah, I can, but at what cost? And I think that's how I framed it. When I was like, all right, I quit. I was like, yes, I can achieve anything, which is what I said when I chose this path. But now I realize that it's just not worth it. I'd rather be an underachiever. Thank you.
Oh, my God. Well, this is going to be fun.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So let's go ahead and watch it.
Okay.
And then we can come back and make fun of Amanda a little bit more.
Yeah. Ugh.
Let's do it. Hey, we're back.
Yeah, what'd you think of the movie?
I freaking hate that movie.
Yeah.
I really do.
Is there any reason in particular?
There's a lot of reasons in particular. I don't like the... I don't like the swagger that's supposed to be charming. I don't find it charming, actually.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like the messaging. Like, he's basically built a suit of armor that's magic,
mm-hmm.
but it's because he's smart. It's got the super
smart. It's got the super genius thing.
It's got the super genius thing that's dumb. It's got the swagger that's unbearable. Mm-hmm. It's got the, like... really weird messaging about military power that I just cannot even like what were they trying to say? It's almost like I think what they were trying to say is like, oh, these issues are just really complicated, but if we only had like someone to save us from it,
mm-hmm.
like
Would you like to do the plot summary?
Oh my gosh. Sure, I guess, because I made you do my movie, didn't I?
I want to hear it from your eyes.
Okay. So Tony Stark is an insufferable ass who is a military contractor. I mean, like, he's a weapons pusher.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, the military thinks he's so cool, like, big fanboying stuff, like he's Elon Musk or something. And it's presumably the Iraq War, because of course.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, in the desert, brown people, evil, you know.
Well, brown people and Russians.
Yeah, you always got to throw some Russians in there. I mean, the Russians have a tendency to be funding the other side in our Middle Eastern wars. But, you know,
mm-hmm.
that's whatever. Russia gonna Russia. Okay, that's how I feel about that. And he's over there, like, modeling all these very cool weapons. And he's almost killed by one of his own weapons that was shot at him from the enemy and, like, saw a bunch of people die. But that wasn't the turning point for him, because he made, like, a super blockbuster bomb that was very, like, weird. It took out, like, a whole town-sized swath of desert, and he was, like, doing that really stupid cliche, like, walk away from the explosion.
You have skipped a significant amount of plot.
Did I?
Yes.
What?
So the part where he's held hostage, and while being held hostage
No. That happens after he does that missile demonstration.
I know. But the blowing up the town and walking away from the explosion is after he's rescued.
No. I'm talking about when he demonstrated the missile.
Yeah, that wasn't a mountainside. That wasn't a town.
Yeah.
Okay.
It was a town-sized swath of desert.
Okay.
Yes. You're going to have plenty of reason to be mad at me about this. I'm 100% certain.
I'm not mad yet.
Okay. Yes. Anyway. Still thinks it's very cool. Then something happens. He's kidnapped. I honestly spaced out for a minute because I had to ask Amanda why we were watching the sequence of events that was happening.
She was like, why does he have an army in a cave? And I was like, no. The army's holding him hostage.
Yeah, but
it's
they were giving him
army.
A lot of leeway. And, like, he was directing them. It was weird. Like, because he was such a super genius, they were going to put him to work mm-hmm. being hostage. It's like,
yes,
you know who actually took enemy soldiers and made them scientists for the United States? That was us. The United States did that. We got ourselves some Nazis.
Well, we welcomed
and
them.
Built a space program.
We didn't make them do it in a cave.
And we didn't make them do it in a cave because we're civilized, right?
We didn't hold guns
to
their
heads.
Oh, my gosh.
Seriously. Anyway, he's in a cave being a super genius mm-hmm. with the slightly less super genius.
Well, super genius in terms of medicine, I guess.
Sure, whatever. And, like, somehow, like, a piece of shrapnel gets in his chest. And the solution to that is to dig a giant hole and put a nuclear reactor in it.
Yeah.
Because magnets.
Because
magnets.
Magnets and science fantasy, baby.
Sure.
It's not science fiction. It's science fantasy.
Okay. I mean, yeah. I would like to hear it called that. That is.
I just came up with it just now.
Yeah. It's better.
I'm the
super
genius.
It's better to think of it that way. Yes. You're
the
super
genius.
Yeah. Yep. She already knows how this plot's turning out, y'all.
Yep.
Science. Almost like she's watched this movie.
Science fantasy.
Anyway, he builds a giant metal suit that's basically plate armor. And he carves out a hole in said metal suit so that people can get a really good look at the one weak spot he would clearly have.
Well, I mean, to be fair,
which they never even treat as a weak spot.
It's that or a headlamp. It's a dark cave. He's got to get a light source somewhere.
There were lights. Anyway, he's somehow managed to build a giant suit of armor in his prison blacksmithing shop.
It's a real good montage for the arms.
Sure. And he gets in his suit, and the power of the suit is bulletproof.
yeah.
That's period.
Science fantasy.
He made a suit of plate armor with a headlight. That's super science for some reason.
Speaking of that, did you ever see the YouTube videos of the guy who'd supposedly made a bear suit, like, in the 2000s? The idea of it being a suit that you could wear, and if a bear attacked you, you'd be fine.
No.
That was a thing on YouTube for a minute. Anyway, continue with the plot.
Yeah, this seems like very much the level of science that making a bear suit would fit right in with. So he just walks out of the place
and looks really cool doing it.
If, you know, if by really cool you mean, did you see the Russian video? This was also on YouTube, where a Russian like science institute revealed their the world's most lifelike humanoid robot and the best programmed humanoid robot, like free motion. You know how most of the movable robots, mm-hmm. like that are kind of built on spring feet and have animalistic joints, mm-hmm. and whatnot. This was a robot that had full human articulation and moved as a human.
Bipedal.
Yeah. And it turned out it was a guy in a robot suit.
Well, Elon Musk did that too. He got a dancer in a robot suit to promo his cool robot he's gonna make.
Yeah.
It was Steve Jobs with Apple.
if you think that was cool.
Yeah.
Then yeah, this was a cool scene.
Well, no. I don't think those were cool. But also, I am looking at this through a significant layer of nostalgia, right?
Yeah, sure. I get it. I get it. We knew this was going to be what this was.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Plus, did the dancing robot have a flamethrower?
You know, everything could be made better with a flamethrower. I will give you that.
Point
okay.
One.
1 point, Amanda. I think we're up to 15, Amy. But yeah. Okay. Yeah. Anyway, for one reason or another, he's launched into space almost.
Yes.
Just
read it to filth. Read it to filth. And then he lands in the sand and his neck isn't broken.
Yeah, but his suit's destroyed and he leaves it there.
And he doesn't have any desert rash.
No. He just walks away and leaves the suit there and gets on a helicopter and goes back home, where his experience of being a prisoner of war has led him to believe that war was bad.
Ish.
Yeah. Ish is correct.
War is bad when other people do it.
Yeah. Which is very America, isn't it?
So America?
It's so America. War is really bad when they do it.
But when I do it, it's good, actually.
Yeah, this is the good kind of war.
I do it the best and the kindest.
Yeah, but I'm not going to sell weapons anymore because it's going to the people who do the war not good.
Yeah.
If it only went to the people who did the war good, mm-hmm. then he was perfectly fine with the, village leveler.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
And there's also this whole thing about his dad having been on the Manhattan Project.
I was gonna say.
And how proud that we should all be of him.
And it's that's actually, I feel
horrible.
Considered a horrific tragedy by most of the world, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah. Yeah. Again, very America.
I'm glad you brought it up because I was going to make sure it got in there.
Oh, yeah. I noticed and just wanted to vomit a little bit in my mouth as soon as because it was clearly brought up as this is a backstory that gives him some credentials in his patriotism.
Yes.
His intelligence. And
live up to your father.
Right.
The patriot.
Right. Right. Hero scientist America style.
Mm-hmm.
Is what that was saying.
Yeah.
And Jeff Bridges is bald and paternalistic and lots of pats on the back.
I think the movie did as well as it did, largely resting on the performances out of Bridges and Downey Jr.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think...
Oh, yeah. And also, he's a big womanizer. There's been quite a bit of womanizing, including
the slut-shaming.
The lady journalist who wants
Christine Everhart, okay?
Wants to have
Get
a good
name
time.
Right.
But also, hard-hitting with the...
Mm-hmm.
But isn't war bad, though, actually?
Mm-hmm.
In that way that's clearly coded as this is an annoying activist... yeah. that secretly yearns for him.
Yeah. Well, not even secretly.
Well, it's not secret to the audience, but it's not like she was publicly his girlfriend or something. Well, no, they had a tryst.
Yeah, it was a tryst.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It would have probably been bad for her image to have known to have been trysting with him.
Bad dog. He's also upset by the plot of this movie. He's also a critic.
Every now and then he has some brain function.
He's like, I got something to say.
I don't know. There's just a very long montage that's supposed to be really funny of him making another armor suit and like giving himself nuclear reactor heart surgery and making mm-hmm. his secretary do it, who mm-hmm. of course they're in love because that's a great trope.
Mm-hmm.
And then I don't know, he's just got a lot of cool stuff that you're supposed to be like, ooh, cool stuff. And I hate this movie so much.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, it's the rich guy worship, too, on top of everything else that's wrong with it. Like, it's just all wrong. Anyway, he makes the suit. He's decided they're not making weapons anymore. Jeff Bridges is, like...
mad about it.
And, you know... it's understandable that he's mad about it. They're a weapons company.
They make money making weapons, like, and that's selling them
their job
to both sides.
He was basically saying, we're going to go out of business, but not. Let's just lose money.
Mm-hmm.
The shareholders won't like it. Well, no, of course they won't. Of course the shareholders don't like this.
Yeah.
I understand that. It's one of the first realistic things in this movie that the shareholders would be upset that the business decided to not do its business.
Sorry, real quick. I'm looking up this Iron Man comic on Wikipedia because I want to nail something down. And under team affiliations, one of the things listed for him is Illuminati.
Of course.
Just like, okay, yeah. Anyway,
sure. Jeff Bridges is like grumpy about it, and like he makes the suit and he flies up into space and gets covered in ice and falls and fixes that
mm-hmm.
with his science magic.
Mm-hmm.
And his pet robot sidekick.
I do.
Who clearly has like the characteristics of what's supposed to be like a robot dog. I don't even, whatever.
Okay, but do you like,
but is like a auto manufacturing arm.
Yeah,
like it's
sci fantasy. So what are your feelings on Vision,
on
the character Vision?
I liked WandaVision.
Okay. That's not the character, though.
No.
Yeah. They basically liked what's-his-name's voice acting for the AI so much that they're like, yeah, we'll make him a superhero. That's how we got Vision.
Really?
Yeah. Jarvis got a body, became Vision.
Is Jarvis the robot arm?
Yeah. Well, no. The robot arm is the dog. Sorry. I got confused between the two.
Who's Jarvis?
Jarvis is the AI that's talking to him all the time.
Oh.
In his shop. That's not some guy sitting in a back room somewhere. That's supposed to be an artificial intelligence.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, I didn't even notice that.
Yeah.
Except the only thing I did notice is like, huh, I guess in 2007 they didn't realize they'd make all AI have a female voice for reasons.
True enough. True enough. Well, and also, like, Jarvis, like, if you get into the comics, like it's a reference.
Well, if it's going to be a character, of course they're giving it a man's voice.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Don't worry. Later in the Marvel universe, when Jarvis becomes Vision and Tony Stark needs a new artificial intelligence to run everything, it's got a woman's voice.
Oh, okay.
So you're covered.
Anyway, while all of this is happening, those pesky Middle Easterners from the cave kidnapping have found his robot armor that he just abandoned in the desert, as though it wouldn't be real easy for them to find that.
Well, he also didn't want the U.S. military to know about it. And it would have had to be flown back on their helicopter unless he could have privately chartered.
Yeah, he made great choices, didn't he?
Yeah.
He made great choices.
Yeah.
Because he's a super genius.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
Anyway, they get it, but the people from the cave turn out to actually be working for Jeff Bridges.
Well, on this one instance, yes. They're contractors.
Yeah. Yeah. And so he's building the suit, but he's just not as super genius as Tony Stark is. And they kind of get on to him, and then he's like paralyzed, and he removes his heart hole reactor.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my word.
Mm-hmm.
But his secretary has framed the first one he made, so he can give himself a new heart, because he had time for that after coming out of paralysis. And then it's like a mech suit showdown, mm-hmm. which is very Japanese, except not as fun looking.
They're pretty bulky in this iteration, yeah.
Yeah. Well, and not like comically bulky, not like building sized, like.
Yeah.
And they wind up shooting themselves off into space where, like, the big suit is beating the little suit, even though it's always been clear that the little suit had the more technologically advanced upgrades. It's just that the battery was better in the big suit. But basically, the downfall of the big suit was that it never solved the icing problem that was miraculously solved earlier in the movie by Tony Stark.
I think it's just probably a thin film of antifreeze just all over the suit is my guess as to how they solved it.
Oh my word.
Like, you know the stuff you put for your windshield?
Yeah, I know what antifreeze
is. Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's just what I imagine they did. It's
yeah.
It's like just a little bit of antifreeze in the polish.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and he made it the, like, gold alloy and all of that
titanium
stuff.
Titanium gold alloy. It's not iron. It's titanium gold alloy. You're so done with this.
Oh, my God.
You're so close to the end, though.
Okay, and then he wins, and everybody's... At some point, he goes and, like, saves a town from his own town destroy weapon that he made. I mean, like...
Two-thirds of the movie earlier than where we just were, but
continue. I don't, like... Am I at the end of the movie yet? Like, they just...
Say the
wins.
Big end part.
He wins.
No, the bigger end part.
He wins real good.
He reveals he's the superhero.
Oh.
No secret identity.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's the end part.
Yeah.
He tells a news conference, I'm the big guy. And they're like, wah! And then the movie ends. And
yeah.
It does the... Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah.
So.
Which I have seriously had somebody, maybe or maybe not the person across the table from me, hear that song come in the radio and go, oh, this reminds me of the movie Iron Man.
Yeah. That was my introduction to the song.
Anyway, I... hated it when it came out. I when I saw that movie the first time, I thought, well, at least we won't have to watch any more superhero movies for a while. I was like, that'd be the end of that.
No.
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 So, like, I disliked it in the way that I was like, clearly there's no one could possibly like this, and here's Amanda.
I'm not the only one.
I know you're not the only one. There's a whole, like, empire.
Mm-hmm. And here's the thing. As I've grown, as I've learned, as I've evolved, much like an artificial intelligence might, call me official intelligence. Call me an art intelligence. I'm art. I'm messing up the word parts just to irk you. Anyhow, I've realized I don't agree with a lot that's in these Marvel films.
And yeah, it's really bad. It's so, like, blatantly bad.
Yes. And so I, like, when people say to me, oh, you're a Marvel fan, right? I say, well, I mean, I don't like where the Marvel Cinematic Universe has gone. Because over time, they made more movies, and over time, my opinions got better. And yeah, also, their storytelling, I think, took a sharp decrease from what I did like about it initially.
Which was what?
Well, as like an 11-year-old, going into the theater, I had no context for who Iron Man was.
Right.
I had not read a Marvel comic. It was just a movie about a guy called Iron Man. We were going to see it, and it starts like, there's a cool guy and he's out on the road and he's taking pictures, and it's like, oh, this is a cool guy, I guess. And then he gets bombed and the action starts, and then he's being held hostage, and it's like, whoa, what's going on? And then he's in a cave and he's figuring it out, and like, wow, I've never heard of this Robert Downey Jr. guy, but wow, look at that. Like, he's got big brown eyes. Like, and he's having such a bad time.
We're going to turn on the bisexual lighting for this one.
Is this implying that, like,
Amanda's got doe eyes for a man in this one? I'm all ears.
Yeah. Well, like, I think that was the first time I'd ever seen Robert Downey Jr. And it was an action role, which I guess was a little unusual
it's
for
hot,
him.
And it's hot.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, action dude's hot. Yeah, and it's like, hot. I get it.
Yeah.
But Indiana Jones all the way, right? Like,
woof.
I get it. I'm not judging you. I do hate this movie, though.
Yeah. But, like, also, like, in watching it for this episode, I'm just trying to, like, key into, like, what still thrills me about it. Because, like, even watching it now, like, with my prop, like, I agree with you.
Right.
I agree.
I know.
It's awful.
I know.
I love it.
That was the same with Indiana Jones and me, though. Like, I completely agree.
Yeah.
But it's awful. But, like, you can't not unlove something that was that important to you.
Exactly. And so, but one of the things that stood out to me about, because I was trying to, like, what's making me so thrilled? And it's not just like the nostalgia and like, I know the story, I know the movie, I know the parts that are cool and I'm excited when they happen. It's also the music, and usually the music isn't so key to me in movies, but throughout it,
like gratuitous classic rock pandering to boomers.
Yeah, but it was, like, stuff that I hadn't ever heard.
Yeah, was new to you.
Yeah, and like, the song he plays in the garage, it's like, people tell me I'm lame and I have a really hard time, but I'm trying really hard. Like, that was, like, punk for me. I was like, wow, what,
this is rad.
An outlier.
This is just rad.
This guy's got feelings about stuff. Like,
yeah.
Right?
Which is what the movie was. Like, all it did was, like, say, I'm a cool guy who's very smart and has feelings. Like, it didn't.
Yeah.
Like, it didn't actually display.
And as an 11-year-old.
That's it.
I was like, whoa.
Cool action feelings.
Yes.
Smart.
But not just, like, the actual, like, known songs, but the actual soundtrack. Like, they have the orchestra bits like any movie does, but there's also just a lot of guitar riff throughout the entire movie. And I happen to know from watching the behind the scenes making of special features that they had the orchestra, you know, do the music, And then also just in his own room with the TV screen just playing the movie for him, basically. A guy on guitar who was told, this is the riff. And he did that for the entire movie. And I just really like that riff.
That, as a musician, that sounds like what hell would be.
I'm not saying that it's like...
I played one song one time where I was on a part that was an ostinato, mm-hmm. which is just repetition. And it was just da-da-da, da-da-da, da-da-da. And the rest of the orchestra was doing things. Mm-hmm. And by the end of the rehearsals and performance of that piece, I wanted to stop playing the violin.
Well, thankfully, he only had to do that, you know, once per movie, presumably. Right?
Oh my gosh, if I had to do it a second time, I'd be done.
Just for the sequel. But by then, you're like, ooh, royalty checks. But, like, it's a motif, a musical motif throughout the film, and I love it. Like, that motif just rocks
gotcha.
Me.
It just
right?
gotcha. It just
and
gotcha.
I was able to identify it this
yeah,
time around.
Yeah.
But I actually would tell people when they'd be like, oh, what are you studying? I'm like, I want to be an engineer. Like Tony Stark, like Iron Man, except without the goatee, the drinking, or the womanizing. And that's how I'd phrase it to people.
Well, at least without the drinking and the goatee.
Yeah. Well, you know, at the time.
Yeah.
At the time. Right. Because I started taking college classes really young.
Yeah.
So, you know, when I was a mathematics pre-engineering student, I was like 13 and 14, right?
Uh-huh.
So, like, not the typical age to be a womanizer anyway.
I'm going to be really, really good, but I'm still going to be just as rad. Like...
I don't think I aspired to be rad, actually. No.
I know, Amanda never aspired to be rad.
I did aspire.
And yet, here you are.
Well, have I achieved? I don't know. So, like the obvious personality flaws, right? Like,
uh-huh.
the movie does a lot of slut shaming, which is like, who's the biggest slut here?
Right, right. Totally skips over that.
Yeah. And then it is a propaganda piece.
Uh-huh.
Right? As...
But, again, for what?
The U.S. military.
Yeah. But, like, he cuts off the U.S. military, too.
Yeah, but then he replaces it.
Right.
With himself.
Which, again, I mean, I guess that does make it very...
It's a one-person symbol of the U.S. military.
Right.
'Cause...
And making it better.
Yeah. And they even have a talk in, like, his buddy Rhodes,
uh-huh.
the Air Force colonel,
yeah,
is giving a little spiel to, you know, actual Air Force soldiers that they rented out to be in the movie so they could shoot it in the hangar. Like, it was funded in part by the U.S. military.
Of course.
Right? Like, as are most Marvel films.
Yeah.
So, it's a propaganda piece. He's talking about how great it would be if, because, you know, they're moving to drone technology, but you can't beat the intuition of a human pilot. And Tony Stark walks in and he says, I say, we just put the pilots up there and leave the planes on the ground. And guess what he does?
Yeah.
He's a stand-in for the entire U.S. military power.
Yeah.
Because what does he do? He goes into other countries... And ignores
any sort of Geneva Convention mm-hmm. or rules of engagement.
Because it's about bad guys and good guys.
Uh-huh.
And he's the good guy with the biggest gun.
And, I mean, one of the things I think that does make it effective as propaganda, too, is that it does establish early on that kind of sensibility towards the violence
mm-hmm.
that, like, oh, it is a shame that we used to do that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we used to sell weapons to the wrong people.
Now we're doing it right.
Now we do everything right.
And we didn't know.
We've made no changes and really no one was held accountable. But you must be crazy if you're doing it wrong.
I
think we're doing it wrong
so
now.
I felt so bad about it.
And we all know
and
we feel bad about it.
And it was this one corporate entity with no one facing any repercussions, of course, that was responsible. And all of the other players, including the feds, had no idea.
Right.
Their hands are clean.
Right.
And
the government comes in at the end and you have SHIELD.
Yes.
Kind of.
Which is literally a covert agency.
Yeah.
It's a black bag group.
It's a black ops. Yeah. They're,
yes.
Yeah.
Literally.
Yeah.
And so what's interesting,
which I'm sure nobody would ever suspect, Tony Stark, who just told everybody that he was Iron Man and will show up doing black ops later.
Well, and in particular with SHIELD, like in later movies and in the TV shows and comics that came after the fact and stuff, that when SHIELD does bad things, it was because they were secretly infiltrated by the Nazis. And so once they get rid of the Nazis, SHIELD's okay again.
Yeah, I don't follow it enough to be familiar with the plot line you're
like,
talking about,
but like
I believe you.
The concept of anything that we ever do that's bad, it wasn't necessarily bad because of the act. It was
bad because there was a shadowy group of what we're going to call Nazis that came in there.
Yes.
And Nazi is just code word for anything bad.
Yes.
Which is why people who are actual fascists today do not understand that they are talking about Nazism.
Yeah. But like,
because that's just a bad.
Yes. And you might not necessarily like have seen it or remember the reference or whatever, but the Captain America film, the first one, Captain America, the First Avenger, or whatever it was called, specifically the director took a lot of inspiration from Raiders of the Lost Ark in making, because it has the same Nazi occult elements where they're trying to track down the Allspark or whatever.
The Allspark.
That, oh no, that's Transformers. It's the MacGuffin, whatever it is.
Yeah.
It's a blue shiny thing, like the Allspark.
Yeah.
That like Odin lost, right? Like it uses the same and very similar era, like tons of inspiration from Indiana Jones. But like the,
except again, Indiana Jones was using actual.
Yeah, but this is a comic book. Like it's
and hokey. That gives it like
it's just more fiction. It's more fiction than other fiction.
My favorite comic book fact is that I love that Superman is called the Man of Steel.
Okay.
And I love that so much because that's what Stalin translates to as well.
Oh. I like that the S stands for hope. That was from one of the movies. It's real bad. Like the S is actually like an alien symbol for what would translate to the word hope. But the line was the S stands for hope, which is just so stupid. And
that's very cute.
Yeah.
Anyway.
But
that's, yeah, I know that's DC. Thank you, comic book people.
I wasn't going to mention it.
I wasn't talking to you.
Well, that's true enough. Okay. So here, the interesting thing about adaptation, and the only reason I'm bringing it up here, is because you mentioned, like, you hate everything about this character.
Uh-huh.
Right?
Yes.
And so the Iron Man first appeared in, like, comics in the 60s, and it was a Stan Lee creation. He put together ideas that were really popular. And,
yeah.
Right?
What if demigods, and he's, yeah.
Well, in particular, like, the one that also stands out to people is, like, X-Men and Spider-Man.
Uh-huh.
Like, he's the one who's like, hey, what about a guy with spider powers? Cool. And so with Iron Man, the context around it was like it was during the Cold War and lots of stuff about like communism and anti-war and whatever. And he was like, okay, just for fun, as a challenge, what if I took a character that by rights everyone should hate and just made him so dang likable that they liked him anyway? And so from the very inception, a womanizing, awful capitalist, war profiteer.
Uh-huh.
And it did really well with women.
But like...
And like romancing the secretary.
He's not all that different from Batman to me.
No. And that's not a new thing, right? And here's what's interesting to me about the Iron Man film, particularly as an updated adaptation.
Okay. Right?
Like, they took a lot of hokey stuff out. Like, his suit doesn't come equipped with roller skates, so he can zoom real fast, right? That was a super Iron Man thing back in the day.
Roller skates are real technology, Amanda.
They are real technology, but it looks real dumb, right? And, like, he's not using, like, 60s speak for, like, hard
talk. I mean, I just don't know how you can even, like, say roller skates would be ridiculous when he's like, I have shrapnel, better build a nuclear reactor hole in my chest.
It looked really silly because it was an all-yellow metal suit with little eye holes and just, like, whoosh on roller skates in the comics. And he's like, I'm going to go fight crime now. Whoosh. Like, it looked silly. Okay.
All right.
And, like... You know, it's in Iraq or Iraq light and
or Afghanistan.
And it's the shrapnel instead of, like, you know, some iterations it's been cancer, some places, you know, like various things. But they changed significantly from the comic in that he reveals his identity. That was never a thing in the comics up until this film. They twisted that and it was huge. And it was, like, groundbreaking for superhero movies. And it was part of what got it so much good regard was, like, this is cool. We've never seen this before.
Oh.
And they changed that key element. It had always been a secret. That was part of, like, every Iron Man story thing is, like, how do I keep my giant, it wasn't just a little hole in the chest, metal vest that I have to plug into the wall to charge, like, a electric car a secret from everybody while maintaining a Playboy persona.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, that's silly.
It is silly.
It's silly.
It is silly.
And that people were excited about the, like, oh yeah, I'm a superhero.
But, you know, even silly stories or mediums or genres, like we might think of as comics, like that medium can still tell something really powerful, right?
It can.
And so one of the story arcs that was sort of top tier for Iron Man, again, pre the movie, was from like 1979, about him dealing with alcoholism. And it was still all the silly Iron Man stuff, but and fighting and war and nonsense, but throughout, it's like, hey, buddy, your alcohol consumption is a real problem over there. What you gotta do about it? And for the time, it was really stand out and, you know, probably not the best take if you were to read it today.
Yeah.
But comics, even Marvel comics, even DC comics can handle and portray big ideas and concepts. And that's not one I saw adapted. And an area, because, you know, they change things for the audience and for the consumer, and they deviated from quote unquote canon to have him reveal I am Iron Man. But they just lapsed over other opportunities for actual potentially good or important storytelling, not just with the alcoholism, but in this movie in particular, the missed opportunity that stands out to me, which I think plays into the propaganda, is in depicting PTSD throughout and dealing with the shareholders and the media after he's returned home. They're talking about how he's a recluse now. They think he's got PTSD and he's struggling, and he sort of looks and he smirks and he's like, nah, don't. I'm on the top of my game and I'm gonna go fix the world with killing it. And it isn't until the third Iron Man movie that they really do start to depict PTSD with his character. But it's almost laughable the way they do it.
Yeah.
And also why. It isn't any of the violence or the torture or any kind of the trauma of what he's had put on him and that he's doled out to other people. It's from during the big Avengers movie when he rides the rocket into the space hole. Seeing space and the vastness of it and that there was bad stuff out there and he was gonna die there. That's what he's got PTSD around in Iron Man 3. And in particular, there's a scene where he has a flashback sitting next to his colonel buddy, Rhodes.
Mm-hmm.
And Rhodes is like, what's going on with you, man? Weirdo. This other military person.
Uh-huh.
Who's seen active combat and, like, run around in an Iron Man suit and knocking people down and blasting them to bits. And I liked the third movie more than most audiences did because it finally did anything with that aspect of the story.
Yeah.
While totally bombing it. And I think maybe in part why they chose to, you know, raise the name or the specter of PTSD and then say, nope, nuh-uh, is part of that same sort of idealized version of the U.S. military might.
Uh-huh. And that they're acknowledging the existence of something called PTSD, but naturally that wouldn't be the case here.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah. And so, like, I'm not saying the Iron Man comics are good as far as stories go, especially, like, the older ones. And, like, I've read some of the newer ones, too, and I was like, I mean, it's okay. I don't know why people are talking about it. Like, it's this cool thing. It was okay. I think the movies are worse.
Yeah.
Like, they just,
Well, I think these movies, and I know this is hyperbole, but I think Marvel ruined cinema.
That is hyperbole. That's also, isn't that the take that what's his name who they were trying to get for Joker had as well?
Scorsese?
Yeah, didn't he say that too?
I mean, I would believe it because yeah. You don't remember a time when the summer blockbuster wasn't always a superhero movie.
Well, even before Iron Man, I was seeing the Sony or Paramount Spider-Man in theaters. And that was a big deal.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sam Raimi. I was seeing the Sam Raimi Spider-Man movies.
Uh-huh.
So, no. I agree with you.
Yeah.
You don't remember a time before the superhero blockbuster.
Yeah. I mean, there were just more variety and more interesting films.
Mm-hmm.
And occasionally one squeaks through right now.
Yeah.
Like people are still capable of making great art. It's not that they ruined the creative aspect. It's that they got the formula down of lowest common denominator. How do you make a blockbuster?
Well, and that's, in my mind, largely tied into the Disney industrial complex.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Right? Because it's not just superhero movies. It's also children's movies. Family movie, like however you want to define the genre.
I feel like there were so many more children and family movies that used to come out that would be varied and interesting.
Yeah, but now like the ones that are you know getting a lot of studio attention and funding.
But there's just less of them too,
and they're not as interesting.
Yeah, they're not as interesting, and there's less of them.
And a lot of them are coming from Disney.
Yeah.
Like, Disney's game.
And Disney is just remaking its own movies with live action and stuff like that.
And people are still paying for it, which is bizarre to me.
Yep.
Yeah. And like, Marvel is definitely a component of that.
Uh-huh.
But I see that as being a symptom of Disney. Like, Marvel would have tried to do it prior to being purchased, but they would not have been as successful as they've been without being under the Disney wing.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. Like,
yeah,
they 100% wanted to do what they've pulled off.
Yeah.
I don't think they would have been able to pull it off without Disney backing it.
Yeah.
So, like, it's this movie in particular, like, it's war propaganda. It's got the genius stereotype and stuff. Ugh. But it's also failing on the psychological element of it too.
Uh-huh.
Because, like, a lot of war movies, which are almost always propaganda, if they want to have the cool special effects and weapons and things, they go to the military for it, and then the military gets to go over the script. That's how it works. Like, maybe PTSD comes up and it's like, oh, I had a hard time with my wife, and like, it's not a great portrayal, but it's not a complete, oh, I don't have that.
Yeah.
Silly.
Well, I found this movie to have nothing redeemable in it. And I think the only thing that carried it was the actors.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, the actors, Robert Downey Jr. had been, look, he's had a good career. He's been pretty good, but he was a bad human being for a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And that was around the time that these movies got popular. So, like, even that was just like, no, I don't find this guy charming.
Well, and so the way...
But, I mean, people can get better. Like, I do want to sit here and say that something that Robert Downey Jr. did almost 20 years ago is something that, like, needs consideration right now. But it was a part of why I wasn't really into it for him either.
And so, like, once I'd seen the movie... I, like, started paying attention to stuff and, like, did my usual, like, I'm going to read every Wikipedia page that there ever existed, tangential to the subject even, right?
Uh-huh.
And so my perception of what everybody else was saying, like, the adults who maybe would have witnessed some of that stuff,
uh-huh,
was that this movie was, like, key to his comeback, but, like, he'd already done a lot of the turnaround. And just no one had really been paying attention until this movie is how I perceived people talking about it when I was 11.
Well, and, you know, that's why, like, he is someone that did exemplify, like, actually trying to make amends and turn mm-hmm. his life around. Like, I do not want a conversation to be about Robert Downey Jr.'s mistakes.
Yeah.
But yes, at the time this movie came out, I was not personally ready to be okay with him.
Yeah. Well, and I'd never heard of him before.
Yeah, right.
And I was like, wow, he's a superhero. Cool.
Yeah.
I want to be like that. But I agree with you. I do think the actors carried the film.
Yeah. And from the perspective of 2008, that was not an actor that I was okay with carrying the film.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. So never on board.
No, never
had
on
no
board.
Reason to get on board.
No reason.
Through the rose-colored lenses of a child. What a good movie.
It almost made you do a science once.
I tried real hard. And, you know, when I told people, and some people in particular, like, hey, I want to, like, sort of follow the life path of this fictional character who's actually a horrible person if we look at it. Uh-huh. Under the lens of reality, some of the feedback I got was like, oh, so what do you think you're gonna, like, invent or make? And I was like, I don't know, like, I know
something cool.
Like, I think the idea I came up with was, like, I feel bad, a toaster. but specifically, because people have made toasters before, but specifically a toaster that when it toasted, it would have a little, like, Iron Man helmet on it. Like, that was the best I came up with.
Branded merchandise.
Yes, basically. It's like, I could have made it with, like, maybe some branches of Disney and Marvel. But, like, some of the ideas thrown out to me, like, taking the assignment very
That's
literally.
That's really cute.
I wasn't I wasn't for engineering, y'all. was like, oh, well, okay. What about making, like, ordnance that eventually over time degrades and, like, makes the land more fertile?
Like volcanoes.
But with guns. So, like, a machine gun, missiles.
And then a wheat field pops up.
Yeah. And I was like,
a seed cannon.
I feel like that's already been done. So that wouldn't be my idea. But thanks for the feedback. And now, like, looking at that as an adult, it's just like, so we raise the earth and make it better for who? The people we just killed? Or, like, us after presumably we've won and then we go in and it's ours now? And that's just, like, colonialism 3.0. Like, what?
Yeah.
And that was, like, conversations about my life path and career was just like, all right, so how are you going to kill people better and more humanely?
Well, yeah, that's... Yeah. But that's a... That's exactly
yes.
the way they want you to think when yes. you watch these movies.
Yes.
And it's the children that they get. And most people don't actually take the steps to, like, get past that childhood mm-hmm. idea about things like this mm-hmm. because they don't go into fields that require them to think critically about them.
Yeah.
Do you have an Ubrick for us?
What about you, Amy? I've just been picturing you this whole time just under bisexual lighting. Like, bisexual lighting. Twinkle noise.
No. No.
If I'm lit with it, it would cast on you as well.
All right. I do want to remind everyone that we are professionals.
Don't watch these at home.